Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this week's episode, we're going to have David Westmoreland. David is an avid deer hunter who is based in Missouri. He's also a realtor for Whitetail Properties. Today we are going to discuss a little bit about buying hunting land, but the majority of the interview will be about a monster buck that he killed on a very small parcel in Missouri. So the misconception among many deer hunters is that to kill a giant buck, to grow a giant buck, you need an enormous amount of property. And David was able to kill this deer that was probably 5.5 or 6.5 years old on a parcel that's slightly over 20 acres. And so he highlights, you know, what he did to entice this buck to stick around. It's a pretty cool story and proves that you don't need deep, deep pockets to manage whitetails. You don't have to have a lot of money to invest it in your property. You don't have to spend a lot of money on your property to keep good bucks around. So if you have a small piece of property or if you have a huge piece of property, you will find this interview pretty interesting. But before we get David on the phone, I want to thank my sponsors, our title sponsor, Redneck Blinds, Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. If you're into filming your hunt, check out Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. Windscent, it's a vapor scent dispersal system that, man, it does a great job of getting deer scent out there. By using activated vapor. Lucky Buck Mineral, Huntworth Clothing. Their slogan, you don't have to spend it all to get it all. They have great hunting clothes for a fraction of the price of everybody else. Morel Targets, Grim Reaper Broadheads. I want to note that we're going to give away a pack of Grim Reaper Broadheads. If you listen to this podcast, you can visit my website, tracybreen.com. Send me an email. The first three guys that send me an email from my website and just say Grim Reaper and show me that you've subscribed to this podcast, I'm going to send you a free pack of Grim Reaper Broadheads. Pine Ridge Archery is another sponsor. Schaefer Performance Archery, they make the XV Arrow Rest. The Outdoorsman's, they make some amazing tripods and backpacks. And Wilderness Athlete, if you need to shed a few pounds or you're tired of drinking sugary drinks, check out wildernessathlete.com. They have great nutritional products. My favorite is their Hydrate and Recover drink. Enter Drop 10 at checkout, and you'll get a discount. Also, Illinois Connection in Pike County, Illinois. If you're looking for a guided hunt, check out Illinois Connection. Now let's go ahead and get David on the phone. Welcome to the Drop Time Report, David. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm trying to brave through these elements this morning in this cold. It's coming too early for me.
I'm not a fan of snow, even though I live in Michigan. So I understand. And, to make matters worse for you, it's hunting season and you kind of run an outfitting business a little bit and sell hunting property. So I'm sure you're burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah. It's our busiest time of the year, to be honest with you. I mean, it's everything's going, guys are thinking about hunting and which, you know, makes them want to look at land and, so they're in a tree on their phone and trying to figure out what they're going to buy or where they're going to hunt next. So it's a busy time. Plus we got hunters in the field, you know, this week, as well. So it's busy, but it's all good. It's the favorite time of year.
Sure. Well, today I want to talk about a buck that you were able to kill this fall. And one misconception among a lot of hunters is you need enormous tracts of land to, kill big bucks. And you've managed a lot of land, but you luckily this year managed to kill a monster on a small piece of property. So tell us a little bit about that deer. You know, how long have you had your eye on him and those kind of things?
Well, that is a good point. We all want these big acreages and want to be able to manage thousands of acres and have our, you know, deer farming, I guess, taken to the ultimate level. But as you know, not all of us can afford that, you know, and this is a prime example. I've managed acreages up to 10,000 acres, but this was on a very small tract. of land, 20 plus acres. And I noticed this buck 3 years ago, and he was just pretty. You know, he was a really pretty, healthy deer. I'm pretty sure he was 3.5 years old, and the property gets a lot of pressure around it. But seeing him, I started really pouring the management tools to it. You know, we did some timber stand improvement, feathered some, you know, hinge cut some trees, feathered some edges, and I actually got a dozer in and dozed a couple food plots because the acreage was pretty much solid timber. And so I dozed in 3 different food plots and just did everything I could, which was kind of fun because, you know, it wasn't huge projects because it was so small. But then last year, you know, the deer showed up again and he was bigger. You know, he was in the 150s or so. And I actually, you know, considered shooting him and he broke a main beam off like right after Thanksgiving. And he had survived rifle season. And I was like, well, shoot, this deer's going to make it. You know, I mean, he's post rifle season and he's living on this ground. I mean, I saw him every day just about that I went in there. And so anyway, it just kind of became a goal. So the past year leading up to this, before I was able to take him, I did everything I could. I limed the ground. I stayed out of certain areas, you know, I normally, you know, cut some firewood on this farm and I didn't do any of that this fall, just made it literally every 20 acres as good as you could make it. And I had Imperial Whitetail Clover planted on one end. I had a corn and bean mix planted on about a 2.5 acre track on the west side. I had, about 4 acres of biologic maximum planted in the middle, kind of as an attraction plot. And then the rest was bedding and cover. Okay. This track actually also had a really good stand of red oaks. And this year, the red oaks really produced. So that was kind of in the middle, just added to it, you know, the natural, you know, habitat made it even better. So he started showing up right about, well, I started noticing him about 4th of July, a little before 4th of July. And I don't think I've ever seen a deer that was more predictable than he was. He was literally on this property 24/7. I had cellular trail cameras up and I was getting him like all times of the night, all times of the day. He was literally living the majority of his time on this little track of land. So, wow. And he had really blew up. I mean, my first pictures of him, I was like, holy crap, this deer's he's going to be over 170, you know, and he just kept getting bigger and more impressive. And it was cool because he was so noticeable. You know, I had such history with the cameras. I mean, I felt like I knew where he was, you know, every day. And he was hitting the clover early, in September. And my wife and I were keeping tabs on him when I was gone and with the cameras. And then when I got in, I think he had missed one day of being on this particular camera out of 8 days he had been there.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was, you know, as you know, opening day of season, it was in the 90s, upper 90s, and I didn't really want to go. I'd been hunting in hot weather for 3 weeks straight, and I didn't want to go, but I knew that, you know, I had to get him probably before the acorns dropped and before people started pressure, you know, around him and stuff. So I went ahead and hunted that evening, and just like clockwork, I mean, I don't know what time it was exactly, but right around 7:30 was when he was coming out. I looked up off my phone and he was standing in the clover. And I mean, just like he had been, you know, the 8 days previous to that. So he made it to about 32 yards, I guess, something like that. And I got a good shot at him and took it. It was a pretty cool deal because it proves, you know, like I said, you don't have to have this 4,000 acre tract of land to kill a, you know, 170s deer, you know, and, hopefully there'll be some to replace him and we'll have you know, more of those in the future. But that property holds more deer by acre than about any property I've ever managed now, just because of all the stuff that I've done to it over the last 3 or 4 years trying to kill this particular buck. But, you know, it's enhanced it for all the deer.
Sure. So you figure he was 5.5 or 6.5?
Yeah, I would say he almost had to be 6.5. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was, you know, I mean, at worst case, 5.5. He was 3.5 when I saw him first. He'd be 4.5, 5.5. And then, you know, this would make him 5.5 or 6.5. Just hard to say. But he was still a real healthy, pretty deer, you know, definitely in his prime. And I hate to even say it, but it would have been cool to see what he would have done in one more year, you know. But given the pressure around him, I was really lucky to keep him as long as I did, you know. So
now looking at that small piece of property, what's around it? I mean, why does he stay there instead of going to the neighbors?
You know, I don't know that answer really, because there are some crops that are probably about a mile away that that I really thought that he would go to those. And he may have gone, you know, at time, you know, off and on throughout the time. I'm sure he did, but he just, for whatever reason, he was a homebody, and he literally lived right there on that property. And after I had taken him, I went back and kind of backtracked where he, you know, had been coming from every day, and I found a really big bed on a little grassy bench in the back of the timber on a ridge there, and three or four big rubs, you know, the size of your leg. And it was real obvious then. I told my wife, she was with me, and I said, you know, I said, this is where he was sleeping every day. I mean, he was literally not traveling more than 200 yards, you know, this early fall from bed to where he was feeding. And, okay. I mean, the bed was wallered down to dirt, you know, and like I said, it was pretty obvious what he was doing, and that's the direction that he came from every day. So
now talk about, you know, for the average Joe out there, the moment we hear, hey, we got a bulldozer in there and we did this and that, a bulldozer can be, you know, expensive. But the flip side is you don't have to break the bank to do what you did here. I mean, how much money do you think you had into improving this ground?
Well, I know exactly how much I had in it. The guy was actually working on a neighbor's piece of property just down the road. And I paid him $1,000 to come in there and clear out those two food plots. And they were both probably right at an acre, you know. And it wasn't real heavy timber. It was kind of an old grown-up field type deal with some pretty good trees in it. But he did both of them in one day. So, you know, a dozer's $125 to $150 an hour, but he did it for a flat fee of $1,000. And, you know, really in today's world, that's not a lot of money for what I got. I was tickled to death, you know, and I was able to kind of lay them out where they were real huntable. You know, I could come down an old logging road on the east side. So any kind of west wind, I had advantage, you know, coming and going, on the clover plot. And so, you know, you could hunt it about every day and not blow your deer out, you know. And then the other one was kind of an hourglass shape. And I actually kept a pin oak tree on the point of that hourglass that, you know, is a solid scrape right now. I mean, it, you know, every deer that comes through that food plot hits that scrape. So from where the stand is on that little plot, it's 20 yards to that scrape tree. And, okay. So it worked out really good, you know, to when you go from timber to food plot by design, you can lay it out exactly the way it needs to be to be huntable, you know. So
now,
it's pretty cool.
Were you having those food plots? I mean, were they overeaten by deer? Were they beaten to death by opening day? Or
no, you know, our deer densities there right now are not real high. We've had DHD the last, you know, whatever, the last 5 years we've had bouts for DHD, and so our deer numbers are not high, but that's the reason I chose the, you know, the clover. It's, you know, it has a high graze tolerant, you know, I mean, deer can eat on it. It actually grows better because they do. It was established, you know, and they didn't ever eat it down to the dirt it's still good now, you know, even this time of year. And then the corn, I did fence it. I hot wired it out through the summer just so they would leave it alone. And then, of course, the biologic maximum, they really don't hit it too good until it freezes and frosts, you know, then they start in on it now. So it was a good, you know, you had three different varieties there that they hit, you know, their palatability is different times of the year. So it was just, he really didn't have no reason to leave. So.
Mm-hmm. What about water?
Well, there's a creek that kind of goes all the way around the south side of that property. So I didn't really have any water issues. I did put in a Banks watering system. There, I guess, more for entertainment than anything. They didn't, that creek will dry out, you know, in the dead of summer sometimes. But this year we had so much moisture, he didn't have any, you know, issues finding water. So
okay,
it was pretty good. But the Banks line, you know, the Banks watering system is a good alternative. If a guy has a small acreage, it gives a deer one more reason to be there, you know. Takes them a while to get used to it, but it is another benefit, you know, for the deer to not have to leave.
Sure, sure. And I've heard about guys, you know, burying 55-gallon drums and,
yep,
you know, yep, digging holes and putting a tarp in it. There's a variety of ways to, you know, add water to a piece of property.
Yeah, without spending a lot of money. You know, there again, a pond could be several thousand dollars, but a deer don't need a 3-acre pond to get a drink. As long as they have a consistent water source, I mean, they'll utilize it. So it works pretty good.
Sure. Let's talk about, you know, buying land or what to look for in a piece of property, even if you're going to lease or, you know, knock on doors. You know, this podcast is not sponsored by Whitetail Properties. You work for Whitetail Properties. And, you know, sounds like you've been in the land management game for a long time. There's a lot of average Joes out there who would like to have a small piece of property, but there is the misconception that, man, you got to have a big piece of ground in order to kill a big buck. How
yep.
do you find that? How do you find that needle in the haystack, that 20, 30, 40 acre parcel that really can produce big bucks?
Well, I think you just have to look at the overall, you know, landscape around you and what it borders, what it, you know, touches. Ideally, if you can get it next to some type of, you know, large landowner or body of land that doesn't get hunted, that's ideal. But then again, you're making, you know, the most out of this property and making it an attraction, you know, where the deer come off of the surrounding properties and come to you and stay. So it doesn't really, any property can be made better for whitetail. I mean, granted, it's easier to start with a good one and make it great. But you can take any property. That's the misconception a lot of people have. They want this ideal property, and that's what they're looking for. But you don't have to have that. You find one. I've got one right now. It's a prime example. It's 40 acres even of timber. And I was telling a guy last night, I said, look, it's solid timber. But I said, you can go down the north end and then come in the middle. There's a good flat ridge that could be leveled out with a dozer. You could probably have about a 3-acre food plot there for probably $2,500 total. And he couldn't see that concept. You know, they can only see what it is, but that's a prime example of that 40 acres could be made a, you know, a central location in that whole neighborhood because it's the biggest, thickest bedding area in that whole probably mile square. It's a 40-acre thicket. So you can imagine to make that, you know, that 40 acres is not big, but every deer in that whole square mile would be going through there because it's the cover. And then you plant the food and you've got a, you know, a wagon hub of deer that are coming into that all the time. So I always tell people I'd rather have 440s scattered around than a 160 because each 40 has the potential to hold a big one. You know, I mean, it just ups your odds. So don't, you know, I don't want people to think that they got to have a 160, 200, 300 acres to have a great deer hunting spot because you make your 40 good, then you're actually drawing deer off of the whole 640, if that makes sense.
Sure. Absolutely. Do you always create bedding areas? I mean, is that a key ingredient
to your
game plan?
Well, that's the hardest thing to create. you can't take a 40-acre pasture and make a bedding area very easily.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do native grasses and you can do some things to enhance, you know, a 40-acre pasture, but it takes a lot of time. I always tell people that the one thing you know, in a short lifespan, you can't build is good cover. So you buy the cover and add the food is what I always tell people is, you know, ideally, if you can buy a 40-acre like this place, a solid track of timber, well, we can go up there in 1 or 2 days and we've got clearing. But if you go the opposite and you go up to a 40-acre cow pasture, it takes years to develop good, you know, structural habitat that'll hold deer as a bedding area.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to go the other way and, you know, start with a thicket and end up with the food.
Sure. Now you're located in Missouri. That's where a lot of your business is done. Do you feel like Missouri is still, you know, a valuable place for people to invest in?
Yeah, Missouri really is the best of all worlds because, you know, you have a lot of opportunity. You've got the, you know, the early archery season, September 15th. You've got the rifle season. You've got the late muzzleloader season now in late December. And you can buy tags and get landowner tags by owning property. You can't do that in Iowa. And then in Kansas, if you own land, you can still get a landowner tag, but you have to have 80 acres to qualify for a landowner. And then anybody that you want to bring has got to, you know, draw a tag. So Missouri really has the best opportunity, particularly as a non-resident hunter, to utilize your ground. You know, you can own 1,000 acres in Iowa. You're still only going to get to hunt every 3 or 4 years. So where Missouri, sure. you know, you can hunt it, like I said, with a bow, a muzzleloader, with a rifle. And you know, we're lucky we got turkeys in the spring. So as far as recreational land, Missouri is probably a hotbed right now for people wanting to buy that type of property. It's probably the best bang for your buck. And it's still reasonably priced. You know, you can still get ground, you know, in the $2,000 acre range where a lot of the states, you know, are well above that, you know.
Yep. Yep. Now can you give me another example of, you know, a good buck you've shot yourself on a small parcel there in Missouri? I mean, is this something you've tried to, you know, make a knack out of?
Well, you know, I haven't really on this particular piece because I just never really had the incentive. Seeing this good, young, genetically sound buck kind of gave me the incentive to really fix it up. I never really hunted that particular piece for years since I've had it, just because I just didn't really ever need it or really have any desire to. But once I seen that deer, it gave me the incentive to try to make it as good as I can. Plus, I had a big place leased for 20 years, and I didn't have that last year or year before is when I lost it. And so I was like, you know what? It would be nice to have my own little place just for me. And so I started playing with it and just trying to make it as good as I could, you know. So it was kind of just a little project that I took on. And originally it was just for that deer. But now, like I said, there's all kinds of deer that have benefited because of it.
Have you seen, since you killed that buck, have you seen any other decent bucks on camera?
Yeah, there's several that are up and comers. You know, I think it'll be maybe a year or two before another one like that, you know, maybe shows up, but there's a lot of potential there. And I've definitely seen an increase in deer numbers. The overall deer numbers are way up compared to what it was. So, you know, anything can happen. And then over time, those food sources will imprint on the deer and, you know, maybe not make sense, but more deer makes more deer, you know? So
yeah.
as these fawns imprint on that corn and those beans and, you know, that maximum and the clover, well, then their fawns and, you know, draw in over time. So I think, you know, it's just going to be nothing but get better over time. So
how many inches of antler did this buck grow between last year and this year, do you think?
I would say about 25 inches is probably what he put on, just guessing. I would say he was mid-150s last year, and this year he was mid-170s. So okay. About 25 inches. He, you could just tell he was a real healthy deer. You know, I mean, it looked like he had gotten to some barbed wire on his left leg at one time, and that's why we call him Flair. His one side kind of flared out, but it by no means was hindering his ability to grow horns, you know. And I think, too, sure. You know, the food that I had there last year really put him in the post-rut in good shape. You know, he had plenty to eat and went into winter healthy and stayed healthy through the year. I think that's another key thing that, you know, it's or during the post-rut, you know, they're short on food and they struggle to build that body up in order to start producing horns. And I don't think he ever had a stress day in his life, you know. So
yeah, didn't sound like he was working too hard to find food and cover, which, you know, kind of goes to show. I mean, that's what most experts say, right? As a buck ages, his core area gets smaller and smaller, and he kind of followed that script.
Yep, I totally agree. I think that they're just like us. The older they get, the more they like staying at home, you know.
He found the lazy boy on your property. It didn't wander far.
Yep, that's exactly right. Exactly. So it was just kind of cool. I said the whole deal, you know, with, you know, keeping track of him on camera and the whole, you know, building the food plots and seeing them develop. And the whole project was cool. You know, it was just a really good deal. And then getting him, you know, opening night, that was kind of anticlimactic because, you know, I really love hunting this time of year. And, you know, we can only get one buck tag before rifle season. So for the first time in years, I think only one other time in my life, I killed one on opening day, but it's been kind of weird not to have a tag during the rut, you know?
Sure.
So.
Sure. How close did you come to possibly killing him last year? I mean, were you really thinking about it?
Yeah, I was going to kill him. Matter of fact, Thanksgiving Day, I saw him and had intended on hunting. I hunted him Friday morning and saw him, but I couldn't get a shot at him. And then Friday evening, I hunted. I didn't see him. And then Saturday morning at 6 a.m., I believe it was, I got a cell cam picture. And I looked, and I was like, I was getting dressed, ready to, you know, go. And I got to looking, and I was like, well, something's wrong. And he had broke about 8 inches of the end of his main beam off that night, sometime between like 11 o'clock Friday night and Saturday morning at 6. And I remember seeing it, and I just, you know, I was kind of, I don't know, kind of, I guess, relieved. I was like, well, you know, that answers that. And I took my clothes off and went back to bed. And
there you go.
Yeah. From that day on, I mean, the hunt for 2019 started, you know. I just took him off the list and I was like, well, oh boy, you made it through this year and let's see what happens next year. And it was like that day, the hunt for the following year started. And he was pretty regular then throughout the late season. It's like he almost understood that he wasn't going to get shot. So he even became more, you know, regular. I mean, he was, you know, all hours of the day and night. And he just lived there, you know. So, and the cell cameras added a big, you know, dimension to this whole deal. I mean, you know exactly which direction he's going at what time. And they've really added a unique advantage, I think, to this hunting deal with the cameras. You know, it's one thing to grab a cell cam, you know, a card, and see what he did last week. But when you pick up your phone and see what he did 3 minutes ago, it's pretty cool. You know, you can really start to pattern those deer, you know, with those cameras like that. So,
so a buck like that that's on a pretty regular pattern, I mean, was he getting out of his bed basically the same exact time every day, give or take?
Literally within minutes in the evenings particularly. Now, you know, I'd see him moving in and out throughout the mornings, sometimes, you know, 30 minutes before light, sometimes 30 minutes after light. But in the evenings, it was almost like clockwork. I mean, literally within 15 minutes of one another, from 8 days worth, he was there, like literally just like a plan. You know, so like I said, I've never seen a deer more patterned than what that one was for his age and size and everything that he was. I mean, it was just like, you know, it was a given. You set your watch by him.
What do you think he ended up scoring roughly?
I think the kid scored him, and it was like 178, I think is what they said. You know, I don't score him anymore. I used to really get into that, and I just, you know, over the last 10 years or so, I just don't score them. I shoot them for the character and the deer they are and the age. And you know, my theory is you shoot them old enough when they're all big, you know. So.
Yeah.
But he was a good one. He was a big frame.
The moral of the story, you know, give him that extra year. Everybody talks about it. And, you know, I interviewed Lee Lukoski last week, and he always talks about the danger of giving them that extra year because you never know if EHD or something is going to strike. But if you can give them that extra year, man, 20 inches plus seems to be a common thing among a lot of hunters. Like they give a deer from 5.5 to 6.5 or 4.5 to 5.5, and they just blow up.
Well, that's the critical time for a blow up is that 4.5 to 6.5, somewhere in there. You know, it's like they just, if they're going to have it, that's the years that they just really do blow up. I mean, and it's just a shame, you know, they can't all get that way. You know, I mean, it'd be cool if they had a sign on them where they said, well, I'm only 4.5. You can't see me or something. But, yeah, I've seen it, particularly in Kansas, where we get to really look at them, you know, and I've got a larger acreage where they do, you know, have a better chance of making it. But, you really see it out there where you can say, okay, that deer's 4.5. And then next year he blows up 30 inches and you're like, holy smokes, you know, that it's just unbelievable. And then that 5.5 to 6.5 is the same jump. I mean, that's when they all really seem to take that big leap. So anyway, it's cool.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate your time today. And good luck, driving in the blizzard, and good luck with the rest of your season.
Well, I appreciate you calling. And like I said, I think you're on to something here. Like I said, don't, you know, I don't want guys to be intimidated by these large landowner deer farmers. I mean, you can do it on as little as 20 acres. So, I mean, I think it's pretty cool to have that, you know, everybody can probably afford that is what I like to say, you know, just start somewhere. And maybe not, you don't end up on 20, maybe in 5 years, you trade that 20 on a 40 or an 80 or whatever, but it's a start and you can at least play the game, no matter how much the acreage is. So anyway, I'll let you go. I'm going to keep after it and try to stay warm, and we'll talk to you again.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye-bye. I want to thank everyone for listening this week. Next week's episode, we're going to have a gentleman from Maryland who shot a monster buck in the state of Maryland. Maryland is not a place that most people think of when they think of states that produce giant whitetails, but consistently over the last few years, Maryland has been producing giant bucks. So next week, we're going to tell his story. If you could do me a favor and go to iTunes or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts and subscribe to the Drop Time Report and also give me a review, I'd appreciate it. To learn more about me or to book me for a wild game dinner, visit TracyBreen.com. TracyBreen.com. Thanks and have a great day.